Namaste and welcome to the Bharatvartha podcast. I'm Roshan Karyappa. We have a very special guest on the podcast today. Mr. Shirish Berry is a renowned architect, and through his work, he probes the multisensory and the immeasurable dimension of space while trying to evoke a reflective pause amidst today's clutter and background noise. In this conversation, we're going to be speaking about modern Indian architecture and how it impacts our lives. So without further ado, welcome to the podcast, sir. Thank you for making the time, and great to have you on Bharatvartha.
Namaste. Thank you.
Yeah. Sir, so to begin things, you know, you've been in architecture for, you know, about 5 decades. I would love to know, you know, how architecture and design itself has evolved in that period of time.
It has evolved just in the same way as the society has evolved, because architecture is many times an expression of the society. And the outer space, as I put it in my film also, the outer space that we see around us, which is measurable and tangible, is an expression of our inner space, which is immeasurable and intangible, which means our values and all that. So just as there has been a distinct shift in the society from sanctity to celebrity, the same thing is evident in architecture. Architecture also has become very commercial. It has become where the wrapping is even more important than the inner content. And this is what is happening in our society. And that's a similar thing has happened in architecture also. So in that, what I try to do is whether the perennial values of humanity are maintained and retained in our architecture. I try to address my concerns in life through my work, like as you said, what is happening in architecture, like in just as in society, man is moving out further and further away from nature. So the same thing is happening with our architecture. In society, man is moving further away from man. I mean, there's hardly any interaction, though we stay so close to each other in an apartment building, there's hardly any interaction. In architecture also, this is happening. So in my work, I try to see how I can create spaces in my campuses, in my house, in my whatever building I design, public building also. I try to see how I can create such spaces which would encourage interaction, which could encourage spontaneous interaction between people and bring man closer to man. Secondly, most of my buildings here, though I'm sitting in my office on the fifth floor, there is a terrace garden outside, and which opens out onto the trees on the outside, you know. So I try to see how my architecture can help in bringing man closer to nature. Means how it can facilitate, or how it can act as a catalyst in bringing man closer to nature through the quality of the spaces that I create. Right. And of course, thirdly, we have managed to move further away from his own self. So whether we could create that silence and the pause in our designs, which would help man to kind of connect to his own self also. And there are so many other concerns, concerns about heritage, and there are concerns about the continuity with the past. There are concerns sustainability. So all those, because I don't think, look at architecture as something which is stuck on or it's not a cosmetic, it's not for cosmetic purpose or just aesthetic purpose, but it should touch life somewhere, it should address our life somewhere.
That's a fascinating expression that you used, you know, the outer space is a reflection of your inner self. Again, a very interesting conundrum that even though we're living more closely together than ever before, I think we have erected these divisions between us, right? So I found you through your wonderful short film on spaces, and I found that really profound and intriguing. You know, for most of us, we don't really pause and reflect on these things, right? I mean, on the value of space itself, or the need to create spaces that inspire us, right? So can you talk to us and help us relate to why spaces are so important and how they impact us?
Actually, each one of us can also, if one goes into one's memory and finds out that there are certain spaces where you enter, where you go in and you feel harmonious, you feel at peace, you feel, you don't feel like shouting and making noise also, you know. So like when you go into nature, certain places in nature, the outer space in nature does that to you. Or certain buildings also, some very beautiful spaces in especially old buildings, where one feels that outer space is impacting us. Similarly, our inner space has also impacted the outer space. Like as I put in shown in the film, earlier water was considered sacred and valuable and as a gift from God, or the food was considered that way. So that time, the kind of structures that we created for storing water or for storing the food were very beautiful, because it was an expression of our gratitude towards God or whoever. I mean, that, okay, this is a gift from nature, from the universe, from God. But now water and food have become commodities which can be sold, bought and wasted. So the entire structure has changed. If you see in my film that today's food storage go down is so different. Or today's waterways and our are so polluted.
Yeah, that's an important point that you bring up. As we have taken some of these things for granted, we have created less valuable spaces for them, right? So, you know, There may be 1,000 technical considerations on, you know, how to make a particular space harmonious and have a sense of unity as well. But for us lay people who are listening from an architectural perspective, what are some principles of unity and harmony that you can include in spaces?
What I would feel is that if the space has a sense of unity with its surroundings, rather than being isolated and claustrophobic, it might help. Then to have the right scale to the space. If it's a scale, if it's an office, if it's a church, if it's a temple, the scales are varying. So scale of a space, you know, a scale compared to the human scale, I mean the height, width and length of this volume of the space is very important also. So certain spaces with the right kind of scale, right kind of color scheme can bring about that sense of harmony and unity. Thirdly, what I feel is spaces that are simple. Simplicity is something very beautiful and very difficult to achieve also in design. Many people tend to clutter up the space. So if you will notice that you were just talking to me about your table. So similarly, if you go to a cluttered room or a cluttered space, the feeling is not harmonious or peaceful. But if the space is more simple, and if there is no clutter, then it automatically kind of helps in uncluttering our mind also for that first time. So that is another thing. Then spaces with which have connectivity with nature, which are connected to nature, would definitely bring about that feeling of beauty and harmony and peace. So, and if they're as natural as possible, even if the materials that you use in making these spaces, if they are as natural, materials are as natural as possible, that would also help in some or other creating that ambience.
Right. So one of the things that we notice with modern living is that, you know, man has become very distant from nature itself, right? So much so that he or she must be told that, you know, nature is valuable and we need to protect it, conserve it. And
told that we are part of nature.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, that they have forgotten. Actually, that is the most essential thing, that we are part of nature. We are not something outside and doing something to nature, or nature doing something to us.
Right, exactly. So, you know, how can we bring man closer to nature through architecture?
Oh, that's what I've been trying in my work also. There could be many ways. I'd mentioned that in my chapter in my first book, which is called Spaces Inspired by Nature. So one way of doing so would be to create that necessary transparency between nature and between the natural space and the man-made space, to blur the boundaries between the man-made and the natural. Like a simple thing is, even when we put a glass, or if you have an open veranda and then we have a garden. So if we have open veranda is there, that will bring us closest to nature because of the connectivity. You know, that transition between the man-made and the natural is very important. So the second best would be a glass, putting a glass, at least the vision is there, visual is there. And thirdly, there would be just a wall with a small window in it, you know. So there the connectivity would be reduced further. It is also possible to connect by the built form. If the built form is more organic, and if it is kind of, if it kind of tends to grow out of the ground rather than be plonked on the site and on the ground, but if it kind of grows out of the ground, then the nature could also integrate with the built form in a better way. Thirdly, another thing which many people forget is when they go to the site itself has a lot of potential. Like many of my sites had some existing trees on them. So we didn't cut those trees, but we integrated them as part of our spaces in the building. And actually they added so much beauty to the building also, and also helped man connect to that tree. Like there was when I did the campus for a residential school in Majgani, there were so many trees on the site. So the entire built form was very organic. It was allowing the trees to survive and move and and shape itself around them. And one of the best trees there was a tree called was a ficus tree, which was in and I liked that tree a lot. And so I designed the learning and living cluster for the children around that tree. So unfortunately, that is not there in the film, but I have designed that into the tree. And after about 3-4 years, I went to the school and was talking to the teachers, and I asked them, it's like a post-occupational survey. So I was talking to the teachers how they like it there and all. They said, we are very happy here. We are, the kids are also more happy and more creative, and they're less violent. I don't know how this is at all. But she said, she felt that living in that environment and working, playing around. And then she told me one more thing. She said that she had asked these small kids, the primary school kids, to write an essay on, you know, like we are in our school day, my best friend. So my best friend was the title of the essay she asked these kids to write up. And most of the kids, 50% or more than 50% of the kids, wrote an essay on that ficus tree as their best. See what spaces can do now, what architecture can do. If I'd cut the tree and built around, built everywhere around, or if I'd kept the tree outside and built the building on the side, this wouldn't have happened. Now, these kids, when they grow up, they will hesitate to cut a tree because of the rapport that they have developed with this tree in their formative years. So this is what architecture can do, and this is how we can help in bringing man closer to nature. Or for example, my Hyderabad project in Hyderabad for the Government of India, laboratory for the conservation of endangered species. There were these huge 10-meter, 12-meter high rocks on the side. But then when I went to the site, I found out that they were on the edge of my site. So they would have to be left out, and building would have to be built separately outside somewhere else. So I requested my clients, there were 4 government agencies. I told them, can we acquire more land on the other side of the rock, behind the rocks, so that I can build there. And we give a better piece of our land, flat piece of land to the farmers, and take the uneven and rugged piece of land from the farmers in exchange. And they agreed. And we did that. And because of that, what happened was I could design my building around these rocks, the glass, you know, structure, you remember, it's there in the film also. So now what has happened is my building has become a tribute to this million-year-old national heritage. Those rocks are our national heritage, which we should preserve. And I've not only preserved, I have the whole building is shaped in such a way that it is my homage or my tribute to this national heritage. Right. So there are many ways in which we can connect our, you know, to nature.
Right. It's, you know, as you were speaking, I thought it's just a wonderful way of integrating with the space rather than, you know, occupying the space. Yes. I think that that is, you know, beautiful. You know, we spoke about how spaces can interact, social interactions itself, right? How it can impact it rather. Yes. And, you know, I remember, you know, old Indian houses would have a central space in the middle of the house and rooms around it, right? Yes. So that, you know, one, you would not miss anyone, you know, walking in and out of the house.
Not,
and second,
not only that, even before entering the house, there used to be a small osri.
Correct.
So that related them, connected them to the street.
Correct.
Yeah. The interaction. Now look at this guy behind you who's sitting with the chai on this thing. You know, why he is sitting there so that he can talk to the people moving on the street. You know, on your that side, left side.
No, there's a colloquial term to it. I forget actually. So there was space outside where people could sit and interact with the public, and also, I mean,
we call it osri here.
Okay. Osri. Right. And also, I mean, I think there was a central, there used to be a central area as well, where, you know, courtyards and stuff, right? You know, how much has modernism impacted some of this adversely, you know? I mean, and how can we integrate some of those older concepts into, you know, whatever buildings and spaces that, you know, we occupy today?
One of the reasons why modernism has impacted it adversely is because we are suffering from the poverty of time. Everybody you see is in a hurry. You know? They don't have time to pause. And you know, even here, I am on the fifth floor. There is six floors I have to climb. But then even to go to the first floor, the people take the lift. And even in the lift, they don't smile at each other sometimes. They just look down, you know, and get off and get up. But I normally climb up and I always walk down. In the morning when I come to the office, I climb six floors. And then later on when I go down, I walk. Every time I walk down. The reason is threefold. One is, it is sustainable, I save on the electricity of the lift. The second is, it keeps me fit, this exercise. And thirdly, it allows me to interact with people. There are kids playing on the way, the street. I chat with them, talk to them. There are a couple of dogs at two levels. They are my friends. So I find, you know, you've got to find some time to improve the quality of our life. We cannot suffer from this poverty of time.
No, I think that's a healthy prescription for everyone to pause and reflect, you know, as we go about our day, right? But there may be, you know, people listening to this and wondering that, you know, all of this sounds very idealistic. But how can we balance this with the pragmatic aspects of daily living, right? How can we include this in our daily life?
I'm talking about this integration in my daily life itself.
Right.
It's not, I don't consider it idealistic. None of the things which I told you, you know, like they're part of my daily life, part of my professional life, part of the life of the clients for whom I made those buildings, you know.
Right. So yeah, it can be made a priority actually. Yeah. Right.
One must have a priority straight in life, you know, like what one likes and what one wants in life, you know, like so that is very important. As an architect, you know, for me, my priority was always being with nature, being in solitude also when I wanted to be with myself, and also. Of course, and also interacting with people. But I said, as an architect, I spent about eight to 10 days by myself at my lake house, at my retreat, you know, where I do work, also design. But it helps me to help my thoughts and various things to settle down. You know, like a muddy, like turbid water.
Mm.
A glass of turbid water, you keep it in one place for some time quietly, then it will settle down and a clean water will come up. So that's what happens to me when I get charged back to life from nature, energy, nature's energy. But that is my priority. If my priority was, I have to control my stuff. I have to see what they're doing, what they're not doing. I don't do that. I give them work and come back after 3-4 days and see what they were and they were. So my priority is being with nature and to trust people also. So if I trust people, they give back. So it works. I mean, agar priority sirf paise mil kamana hai, you know, like just make money and do this thing, then I would stay put in my place here and keep shouting at my staff. I don't know what they do, but I know they're doing all right. So Priority is very important, isn't it?
Yeah. Right. No, that's a great aesthetic to aspire to, actually. You know, coming back to the previous question, right? So, how do you think we can develop and promote our own Indian aesthetic in architecture?
Indianness could have many, many facets. And one of the first most important context here, it's difficult to say Indianness because Ladakh is India, Kerala is India, and Rajasthan is also India. And we have that beautiful diversity in the country. So let us not wipe that out and construct buildings which are which could be anywhere in the world. The typical glass aluminium clad buildings, right, which are anywhere in the world. In India, the architecture of Rajasthan is so beautiful and different against the architecture of Ladakh, which is also so beautiful and different. Against the architecture of Kerala also, which is also very, very beautiful and different. So let us not homogenize. India is different in different places.
Right.
And let us, in Kerala, because and these buildings are also again very different because of their time-testedness. Like the Kerala buildings have the roofs and the verandas and the courtyard because of their response to the climate of that place. Their response to the materials available there. Even in Ladakh, it's the same thing. Rajasthan buildings are very different. They are more. They would not have so much opening, but there would be mud walls enclosed, and it would have, you know, good insulation, and there would be a pool inside because they have to respond to the harsh hot climate. There are other similar some things which may be common is like in India, in most places there is a certain sense of arrival at each place, you know. Like either in a temple, there's a Deepamala or something, or in a Angan, in a house, we have an Angan with a Tulsi Vrindavan. So I even do that today, like in the entrance to the place, that is a symbol of, you know, arriving, you know, at a place, the Tulsi Vrindavan, the Tulas, you know, you have that.
Right, yeah.
So another thing is, which you talked about is the courtyard, which is very beautiful. Then there used to be certain niches also in our walls, which where you could keep certain things and display. So we need to take the spirit of Indianness and reinterpret it in a contemporary manner, but at the same time, not homogenize and make it, you know, bland, you know.
What are some places in India that you would recommend we should all visit just to be stunned by the architectural beauty of the place?
You mean old architecture?
Any, I mean, your top three or four places that would leave us awed.
Oh, yeah, so there are quite a few. India has so many places. I mean, I traveled so extensively. Kailash Temple is, I think, one of the very beautiful places. Kailash Temple is in Ellora. It's almost 1800 to 2000 years old. 1800, and it is a rock cut temple and a fantastic space to live in. To live in means to be in. Actually, I have had something at the back of my mind which I may do sometime, because normally at the evening the guards take everyone out and close the temple. So I was thinking of hiding myself somewhere and stay there overnight and feel that space in the night, you know, because it's very beautiful. And they have what accuracy and precision even in those days. They started from the top and they came down by, normally architecture is done by addition, this is done by subtraction, and then came down, and very, very beautiful. So that is one place. Mandu is very interesting. Mandu in Madhya Pradesh. Fatehpur Sikri has some very beautiful architecture and spaces. And Kerala, the Padmanabhapuram Palace, which doesn't have the pomp and show of most other palaces, which are Indo-Saracenic or you know, influenced by the colonial architecture. But this is a very, very beautiful, simple vernacular architecture, white walls, dark brown wood and tiles, and very beautiful spaces. And I call these my pilgrimage places, all these people. And I mentioned that in my book called Wanderings and Ponderings, and there's a big poem there called On Pilgrimages. Right. And then there is another something very unique in India is are the stepwells in India. They are there in Rajasthan and mainly in the hot areas. Ahmedabad, the Adalas stepway is very beautiful. It is a seven-storied structure which steps down to the water. So how beautiful that, and how beautifully they respected the source of water. And also what has happened is when they dug underground and went down all these seven levels, in between they have pavilions at different places. And these are fantastic social interacting spaces and air-conditioned spaces. In summer also, people can, when they went to fetch water, they would sit there and talk to their neighbors, talk to others, you know, and then come back because it was so cool there. When they went out, it was hot. So inside, it was so nice. Right. So those are some of them. But there are so many.
Right. So as you are speaking, I'm reminded of what you call randomness and serendipity in your work, right? I mean, all of these places don't just serve very functional aspects, but they also do all of these other things that are equally important, right?
Yeah, really important in life.
Right. So this has been a fascinating chat, sir. And to, you know, leave the audience with something of a takeaway, what can people do? Some simple things that people can do to improve their spaces, their homes, their societies, in your opinion? I know you've spent 5 decades working on this very same thing, but if you were to give in a nutshell, basically.
We talked about it a little bit before earlier about when you asked me about harmony, unity and harmony in spaces. So we did touch upon that. I think for the sake of sustainability, for the sake of harmony and all that, I think if each person decides to reduce his consumption, just for the sake of consumption, you know, for functionality, for functional things, for what is necessary, one must consume. But unnecessary consumption in terms of just to show off, you know, like you can get a simple curtain for if you can get it for 100 rupees, you go and buy it for 1,000 rupees because it's branded. So that also is not necessary. And then simplify your surroundings, your environment. That means unclutter it. Uncluttering it would help. Then bringing in some nature, either even if it's a city house, if you could have some potted plants or a small terrace or a view of the sky, a view of the sunset, even from a city apartment or city house, or a windowsill plant, you know, plants, that would also add some life to that space. And also what I feel we should do is not just restrict this to our own private surroundings and environment, but also extend it outside. You know? Have that sense of sharing. That way, like we have also tried to take some neglected spaces, and from my own fund, I have tried to clean it, develop it, you know. So because I have some extra money, okay, let me do it, you know. So each one of us, if we could do that, small corner of the roadside or small piece place somewhere, you know, or in a village, there are schools which don't have girls' toilets. So we designed and constructed those toilets from there. They're so happy now. The boys, even the boys go to clean the girls' toilets. So, there's barren areas, vacant areas, which we see. So where we have gone and planted trees. And within 2, 3, 4 years, it is shared there. So that again brings people there because people want to sit in the shade. Shared normally harbors activity in India. So if we can also share and care for our surroundings, public spaces also, that would also help in bringing about that small sensitivity to our space.
So this was a wonderful conversation. Great note to end the podcast on. You've given us a lot to think about. I think to go beyond ourselves and also to look within ourselves. So this was a very, very good conversation. So thank you so much again for being on the podcast. I really appreciate your time and look forward to speaking to you again.
Thank you. Thank you, Roshan. Thank you.